Hello, my name is Sarah Svahn. I'm 16 years old. Today is Thanksgiving, November 28th, 2019, and I'm speaking with my grandma in Orinda, California.
And my name is Sandra Lim. I'm Sarah's grandmother. I'm 72 years old.
Okay, so first question, can you tell me about your childhood, and do you remember any of the stories that your parents used to tell you?
Well, I grew up in the Philippines. My parents used to tell me a lot of stories. And one of the stories I used to hear a lot about was my mom's childhood when she was very young and how she used to play in the outskirts of a town outside of Manila and how she used to run around the fields and she would once in a while encounter lots and lots of snakes, and she would jump over them, you know. She was young and she was fearless, but when she got older and she looks back, she became deathly afraid of snakes.
Oh, interesting.
That was one of the stories that I remember very well. And my father used to tell me a story because when World War II broke in the Philippines and he was a first year in the military school, he was a cadet. So they had to send them all home because there was a lot of bombings by the Japanese. They occupied the Philippines. So one time when he was on his way back to his hometown, he was riding a train and he was still wearing his cadet uniform. A military officer, very high officer of the Japanese army, caught him and tried to take him away or, you know, was threatening to put him in jail. So he basically bribed his way out of it, and he talked him out of it and said, I'm going to give you. He gave him his watch, wow. He gave him all his money and said, there's more of that if you let me off in the next stop. Wow. He was young. He was only 17 or 18 years old. So this Japanese man, soldier or officer, let him go. And that was, you know, the end of that. Many, many years later, my father saw him, the same Japanese officer, and he was hiding from him because he might remember him. But he never really, well, they kind of looked at each other, but nothing ever came of it. That's one of the stories from my father.
Was that after the war was over?
Yeah.
When they
saw
him again?
Yeah, I think so. 2 or 3 years later, right?
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what are some lessons that you learned from your parents?
Well, a lot of lessons. One of them was how to get along with people who are, although we considered ourselves more privileged than most of the ordinary people, my mom used to always tell me to always act dignified and be a lady and never look down on other people. Mm-hmm. Always make them feel at home with you, and I think I've followed that through my life.
Yeah. That's nice. That's good moral. And who has been the most influential person in your life?
Both my mom and my dad and my grandmother. I love my grandmother dearly. She lived with us and I was always with her. We were together all the time.
Yeah.
When she would go on vacation, she'd take me with her. And we did a lot of nice adventures I'll never forget. Simple things in life. That was so happy. Happy memories. We used to go fishing in a lake. We used to go crabbing in the lake. We did so many simple things, and I just loved her so dearly. Yeah.
It's like me and you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so who is someone that you'll always remember?
Oh, a lot of people.
Well, who's one?
My father.
Yeah.
Course.
Yeah. Okay, so we're changing topics now. Can you tell me about your experience moving to the United States?
What a shock that was. Because when I came here, I just was starting my first year of college in the Philippines. I went to a very large university that was very liberal, because prior to that, I went to a private school for girls. Which is very, very strict, run by nuns and, you know, Catholic school and stuff. And So when I finally got to college and I went to this big school, it was a big difference, but I was enjoying it. There's so much freedom. You can do so many fun things that you could wear, you know, what you like, any clothes. There was no uniform. I made a lot of nice friends, and I was just starting to enjoy it until my father said, "We're going to pack up and leave and go to the United States."
Oh my gosh.
And I was so sad because I wanted to stay behind and be with my friends and continue going to school. And I begged and begged them, "Can I just stay? I'm going to live in a dormitory." They didn't want me to stay because I'm the oldest of six children and I had an obligation to be with them and to do some of the duties that that was responsibilities that I had as an older child with this kind of assignment that my father got. He was in the diplomatic corps. He was assigned as the military attaché. So I came to this country and I had to go to school here, and it was still sort of similar to my old, to the university that I was in the Philippines. But the shocking part of it is it's so cold. There's winter, there's snow on the ground, and I was driving myself, slip sliding all over the place. And I remember falling on the snow, changing classes between buildings.
Oh my gosh.
It was such a shocking thing because I came from a tropical country.
Yeah.
But you know, you kind of learn to live with it. That's one of the shocks. And then you learn to, but I was always a little nervous all the time because obviously I'm foreign.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that people were probably looking at me differently. And I was the only girl in my class.
Oh.
So I had to work extra hard to show these boys that I'm worthy, just as worthy as they are in my field, which is accounting.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And are you glad now that you came over, or do you wish you came later or not at all?
Well, yeah, I'm glad I came over because I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah.
But because I'm already here, I made the most of it, and I made a life that would make me happy, and went to school, and then I met my husband, who is the father of your mom, and we tried to have a good life together and raised the little kids until when they got a little older and life changed.
Yeah. So was the hardest thing adjusting to the weather or other things?
Well, yeah, the weather, the culture, the permissiveness. This country is very permissive. People were very outspoken. They can say anything they want. We were like that in the Philippines. Everybody was always restrained in how they speak, especially there's a lot of respect for older people. Here, everyone is treated equal.
Do you like that? Or
whether you're old or not. In some ways it's nice, but in some ways you still need to address, or you still need to recognize that some people are older than you, wiser than you, and know better than you. You know, you can't just ignore that just because everybody's supposed to be equal. That's not always true in terms of exposure, experience, that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. So was that the biggest difference between the United States and the Philippines?
What do you mean?
Was the equality of like age and experience?
No, there's a lot of differences, obviously.
What's the biggest one?
No, it's hard to tell. But yeah, but it's mostly, I think, the one of the most significant things that was an eye-opener for me is how people are very outspoken.
Mm-hmm.
They say what they think, and didn't matter who was there, you know, who could hear you or what. Sometimes it got them in trouble.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's always timing for everything, and you have to have the good timing for everything, but some people don't know that. They just keep on. So there's a lot of freedom here, a lot of permissiveness, and it's excused and it's accepted.
Mm.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things, yeah.
So is it not so good that people get to be outspoken and say whatever they want all the time, whenever they want?
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be all the time, whenever they want. There's got to be timing. There's got to be some timing.
Mm-hmm.
You can say things, but you've got to pick the right timing.
Yeah.
And you've got to pick the right audience.
So does the Philippines have restrictions on freedom of speech?
Well, sort of.
Like more social restrictions or like actually in the politics?
Yeah, more social restrictions because I think the people there grow up thinking that you always have to be a little respectful. And when you're respectful, you have to be restrained sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just blurt out and say, hey, you're ugly. Or I don't like what you're wearing. You can't say that. Or, you know, you've got too much makeup on, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So when you first came to this country, was there anyone that helped you that you can remember?
Not really. No one that I can remember. Mm-hmm. I was basically on my own. I was very independent, and I learned to deal with things myself, and I made a lot of good friends who were also foreign from Europe, from, you know, mostly a lot of Europeans. And there was one Vietnamese girl. She happened to be the sister of Madame Nguyen, who was the princess of Vietnam at that time. Because the school I went to had a lot of diplomatic children like me. So, and then I became good friends. There's this guy who liked me. He was the son of the ambassador of England. His name is James, and his last name is Dean. So his name is James Dean. Really handsome, good-looking guy, you know. Who else? Yeah, and then I had a very good friend. I met her in typing school. And her name was Deirdre Stobie. She's Scottish. I couldn't understand the word she said. She had this really thick accent. She was full of freckles. And she looked like a Raggedy Ann, but she liked me. She followed me everywhere. It's fun. So you I don't understand what she said. Yeah, this Scottish accent. Yeah. When she calls me, and I figure it out because of what she's. But when she calls me on the phone, God, I don't understand what she's telling me. But she just liked me so much. So every time there was some kind of a get together of all the children of the diplomats by the State Department, she'd be there. James Dean will be there, and all these other people, I can't remember their names anymore. But she was always with me. Deirdre Stobie, S-T-O-B-I-E.
So you were all sort of learning how to be in the United States together.
Yeah.
And since then, who do you feel like, or is there anyone that you feel like you've helped a lot?
She?
Yeah.
Deirdre, because I think that's the reason she was following me around, because I always looked so confident, even though deep down inside I was really not, but I always tried to look so confident and composed, and I knew what I was doing. So she's following me around all the time.
That's funny. Okay, we sort of already talked about that one. What were the most difficult moments that you remember when you first came to the United States?
Well, one of them was dealing with the weather. It was so hard. You have to dress differently, you know, because you have to dress in layers. I was always cold, so I had to wear a hat, I had to wear gloves, I had to wear heavy coats, I had to wear boots. There's so much on your body, and you're walking around with all this weight. Whereas growing up in the Philippines, you just hardly have any, you just have a shirt or a light dress and, you know, sandals, and you walk around. It was so free. And here you got all these things all over you, and you have to walk with this heavy stuff. So that's one of the things, was the weather.
Yeah. And what was it like being in the nation's capital when you first came here?
Well, even at that time, I didn't even know that there was such a difference.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I mean, we had a very different lifestyle than most people living in other parts of the country, because we were in the diplomatic, you know, system. And most of the people are basically very privileged, you know, and like I could, you know, we were not, we were immune to some of the traffic rules and regulations, especially the parking.
Oh, that's cool.
So I basically sort of abused that. So I parked anywhere, and I'd get a ticket, parking ticket, every single day. But I never paid it. And I kept it in my glove compartment till one day it was like 2 inches tall.
Oh, no.
Then my father saw it. He got mad at me. Because there's no place to park. I have to go to school, and I just park anywhere. I have diplomatic plates, so I park anywhere.
So why'd they give you tickets?
I don't know. They're not supposed to.
That's funny.
I know, they're not supposed to, but they did. So I kept saving it. Then one day, a couple of years later, I think my dad got some kind of a letter from the motor vehicle saying this plate number has this many tickets, unpaid tickets. Of course, they were not collecting. It's just for your information. Yeah. So my dad said, really? Where are they? I said, yeah, they're in my glove compartment.
That's funny.
He paid something, though, because he got embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Then he said, you can't do that anymore, but I kept on doing it because I have no place to park. I have to go to school. I'm late, you know.
I feel the same way now. So coming from another country, do you remember moments where you felt, like, overwhelmingly unwelcome or welcome?
Mm-hmm. Let me just think.
Yeah.
Where did I feel unwelcome? When I first got my job. Mm-hmm. I got a part-time job in an insurance company, mm-hmm. and that job was somebody got it for me who was also a daughter of a diplomat. Mm-hmm. She was already working there. She's an older woman, so because I got that job, the other people who were, you know, natives, mm-hmm. regular, who were not, and I was a college student, they're not. You know, mm-hmm. they're not as experienced or okay. as educated. And they looked at me like, they weren't very friendly to me because mm-hmm. they think, you know, I'm a privileged person. Oh, she got this job because of certain pulls and this and that.
Yeah.
So I really felt unwelcome, but I did my best to be liked by them. So eventually, after a while, they liked me and they started giving me stuff, like somebody would give me a donut, you know, in the morning. Yeah. Got you a donut, it's on your desk. Oh, thank you. You know, trying nice. To be friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was really hard.
Yeah. So you felt overprivileged, not like you were below them.
Yeah.
You felt that's interesting. And then
it's
were
terrible.
The Yeah. So would you rather, well, I mean, obviously neither one is good, but would you rather feel like you had more than someone going in and they're judging you for that, or that you had less than someone?
Oh, well, no, it was nice that because I was more educated than they are. I was a college student. Plus, economically, we were in a better place than most of these people were just coming from lower economic things. Mm-hmm. They never went to college. They just high school graduates or went to a vocational school to do typing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I went to typing just between school, you know, the summer before going to college. My dad sent me there so that I can type, mm-hmm. learn to type, and I can do stenography.
What's stenography?
Well, shorthand.
Oh, okay.
They don't do that anymore. And so that when I got to college, he said I'd be well equipped, mm-hmm. you know, to do my term paper, and I can take shorthand when they're dictating in the class.
Yeah.
It's really something else. That's I was
fun.
The only one in school who could do that. It's called
Greg
Shorthand.
Greg Shorthand.
You can look it up. Gregg Shorthand. I still remember some of it.
Yeah. Okay. So was there a moment, event, or person in your life that shaped your political views today?
I can't really specifically remember, but my first real, well, aside from that job I had that time, I had a summer job that was really enjoyable, and it was like one block away from the White House. Mm-hmm. And I worked, it's called the National Preservation, National Trust for Historic Preservation. That was my first accounting job.
Nice.
So I worked for two old ladies, and, you know, they were doing all the accounting, but they were teaching me. I had to do stuff for them, and I learned more from them than from school, really. And they're very, very conservative, and the people that work there are, you know, the people who basically who belong there are also better than average people. Mm-hmm. Rich people's children were there,
okay.
working there, and it was fun. I had fun with all these people, but I enjoyed these older people, older women. And but it didn't have anything to do with my political stuff because I mm-hmm. wasn't so involved with politics.
Yeah.
At that time.
When was the first time you voted in an election in the United States?
Oh my goodness. I think I already had a baby.
Oh, so late.
Oh, yeah, much. I couldn't. I became a United States, a U.S. citizen. When Tiffy, your mom, was a few months old, I was carrying her in the courtroom, and I was getting I was getting sworn in. I had a baby in my arm because, you know, your granddad was not there. He was always out of town, so he was never around in all my important times of my life. He was never around. So I had this little baby with me, and I was getting sworn in. Your mom was, I don't know how many years old. She was born. She was 10 months old, I think, 9 months old.
Cute.
Yeah. So since then, I could vote, but I really wasn't voting regularly, you know, because we were living in Cincinnati.
Okay.
And I had a little child, so I really don't think I really voted until I was in New York, maybe.
Okay.
You know, I was already much older.
Yeah.
I wasn't too involved with the politics back then.
Now you are, though? You feel more involved?
Oh, yeah. I know everything that's going on over there.
Over there.
I watch everything. I watch the news every single morning, early in the morning. So now I know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true. When you get older, you get more involved in politics and you become more passionate about it, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like you have a different perspective since you haven't lived here your whole life?
No.
No.
So I basically feel like I've lived here my whole life. I came here when I was so young. I was only 17.
Wow. My age.
Almost your age. Yeah.
That's crazy. It's like two different lives.
Mm-hmm.
So you're an accountant, like you said. So what lesson has working taught you?
Responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being an accountant and the kind of positions I have held, it's a big, big job, a big responsibility, because these companies rely on me.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not there to do the right thing, they will fail.
Wow.
They will really fail. So they really rely on me, and I realized what a big responsibility these things are. I didn't even know, but you know who told me that was my father-in-law.
Okay.
Your granddad's father. When I told, he was asking me about my job way back then, what kind of things you do, and I told him, he says, wow, that's a big responsibility.
Yeah.
And when he said that, I thought about it. He's right. I never even thought about it. But yeah, it is. But you know, I'm very glad in my profession. I'm glad I chose this profession. I really didn't choose it. My father chose it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a doctor when I was young. Ever since, I've always said I'm going to be a doctor. So when it came time to choosing, my dad talked to me and said, the problem with studying medicine is it's so long, takes so long. And back then, you know, women didn't study after they got married. And he said, you're just going to get married, and then you're going to stop studying, and then you'll never finish, or you'll never practice. And so I gave it up, because that's the way it was back then. And then I thought about something else. Okay, well, then I want to be a nurse. He says, no, you're not going to like being a nurse, because we know what that is. That's just a high-class maid.
Okay.
You're just going to clean up people's butts and vomits and things like that. You don't like that. That's not the kind of work you'd want to have, he said, you know. So, and that's true.
Mm-hmm.
They do all the dirty job, all the dirty work. I said, okay, well, then I started thinking about it some more. I said, okay, I'm going to be a foreign service. I want to be a diplomat.
Oh, okay, like him.
Yeah. I want to go, this is before we even came to this country. I was still in high school. I want to be a diplomat. I want to be a foreign service. I want to be assigned to different countries, you know, that kind of stuff. I said, that's not good either for a girl, because your reputation is going to be at stake. You know, the men will not be interested in you anymore, because they're going to think, oh, you've been living here, you've been living there. Who knows what you've been doing all over those places?
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then, virtue was very important,
mm-hmm.
especially the culture in my country. So I said, well, what should I be then? And then he came back to me and says, well, you're very good in English and you're very good in math. You should be an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what's that? Well, it's all about numbers. You're going to have to, you know, take care of companies and keep track of their spending and all the money that they earn, etc. You're going to do really well. That's what my dad said.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so he chose it for me. And thank goodness that he did, because I am good in math. Mm-hmm. And I'm very meticulous. We're very meticulous, have very detail-oriented. I see every little tiny thing. And so I like my job because, mm-hmm. you know, even with bad times and in economy and everything, I still am able to get a job. Because yeah. Everybody will always need an accountant, right. you know?
Yeah, so you're glad in the end
that sure, that's what you chose. And it makes good money, yeah. pays well.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's good.
Are we pausing?
Okay, what advice do you wish you could give your younger self, if you could?
Well, I don't know. I haven't thought about
it. It's okay. Anything.
What advice should I give my younger self? I guess I should have been less shy. I was a little bit shy. So most of the time I was quiet and I didn't want to participate in a lot of things because I was, basically it's because I felt foreign and I didn't want people attention to myself in case I might be saying the wrong things. So it's very quiet, but things changed drastically once I had children.
Mm-hmm.
Then I became the opposite.
Okay, what are your hopes for me or my children or any future descendants of you?
For you?
Mm-hmm.
I hope you'll be very, very successful in whatever mm-hmm. it is that you endeavor. And I think you will because you're very smart.
Thank you.
And I see myself in you a lot. Really, I do. I feel like you are me.
Me too.
And I see your mom in you, because mm-hmm. your mom was just like you
mm-hmm.
when she was your age. She's very responsible about school, very, you know, I never had to guard her, be a helicopter mom and watch mm-hmm. everything she did, especially when homework, I never looked at her homework. I knew she was doing it and she was always doing well in school
mm-hmm.
and the same with you. So I just hope you'll have you'll choose the right path for mm-hmm. you that you know you'll be good at. It's important that you like mm-hmm. what you're doing, and what you're doing is something that you're good at. Because some people have made mistakes in their lives where they chose the wrong thing to study
mm-hmm.
and they're so regretful, you know?
Yeah.
And then they decide very late to change paths, change career paths, go back to school, do something very different, mm-hmm. which is also okay. But you kind of wasted time a little bit,
yeah.
you know. But if you know what you're doing, and I think hopefully you do, and you know where you're going,
mm-hmm.
you have to be focused. You can't be like wishy-washy about it and just go for it.
Okay.
And then you'll be happier. Because mm-hmm. if you enjoy what you're doing, you'll be happier. If you hate what you're doing and you're doing it because you have to do it, you won't ever be happy.
That's a good lesson.
For you.
So when you were young, what did you think your life would be like when you were older? And has it turned out differently than you imagined, and how?
Well, it turned out differently in that I got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't something that I had planned. I thought I was going to have a family and it was going to be a complete, intact family all my life till the end, you know. But that changed, and everything changed.
Yeah.
The focus changed. It's like brakes, and then you have to turn right. You know, I can't go straight anymore. You have to turn right and go find another route.
Another.
Yeah, so what was the question?
Well, that's how your life has turned out differently than you thought.
Than what I thought.
Do you feel like we're complete now?
Well, I made the most of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I made the most of what I have because I felt like, okay, this is the cards that was laid out for me. So I'm going to do the best I can and try to make the most of it and be happy with it.
Yeah.
And as long as I have the most important people close to me, That's all I need. Yeah. And when you were born, I was the happiest woman in the world. I really was. It's like I had another baby of my own, is what I felt.
Yeah.
It's the best, one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Me too. When I was born.
When you were born.
Well, I feel like we're complete now. Okay. So, in all of your accomplishments, personally and professionally, what makes you the proudest?
Well, I'm very proud that I was able to stand on my own two feet after I got divorced without help from any single person.
Yeah.
Everything I have, everything I own, everything I've done, every decision that I have made was keeping my two daughters in mind all the time. Was always for them, and that was all that's important to me, and I'm very happy that I was able to fulfill the things that I wanted to do despite the fact that I was doing them all by myself without help from anybody. That's what I'm really proud of.
That's a good thing to be proud of. Do you have any regrets in life?
Well, no, not really. I mean, no, I don't really have any great regrets. I mean, I regret that I didn't see my mother often when she was still alive. I only saw her once in a while when she came to visit me here in this country, when she wanted me to go to the Philippines more often. I never got to do that until it was too late, because when she was sick. Then I decided I'm just going to go there and stay by her side as long as she needed me. And every time I would come back, try to come back here, because I left the two kids here, she would always say, not yet. So I would delay my flight. Then one day I decided, okay, I'm just going to stay. Because the doctor said, if you leave, you're going to have to turn around, come right back, because she's going to die.
Oh, wow.
When you leave, she'll die. So then you'll have to turn and come back. So just stay. Just so I stayed. And I ended up staying there for almost 4 months until she died.
Wow.
And I didn't see my children for about 4 months, They got bigger a little bit. But we were talking a lot on the phone, and I was writing them letters. And there was no email that back then. So I just called them on the phone, and then I wrote them letters. And when Sonia turned 14... I couldn't go home. I wasn't there for her birthday, so I wrote her a really long letter that I'm not going to be able to make it home for her birthday.
Yeah.
And she replied to me. She says, that's okay, Mom, because Grandma needs you more than we do.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's the most understanding letter I heard from a 14-year-old kid, you know. She needs you more than we do. We are fine.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't long after that. October 14, Grandma died October 24, 10 days later.
Yeah, so she did need you.
So that's the thing I thought. I felt very, very sad that I couldn't see her as often as she wanted me to until the very end. So when she said, don't go yet, I decided, okay, she needs me. She deserves that I be here.
Yeah. That's impactful.
That's my regret.
So if you could hold on to one memory from your life forever, which one would it be?
I don't know. There's so many memories.
No, there's a lot of good things.
So many memories. I can't have just one. I have lots and lots and lots of them, so I can't really answer that question.
And last one. If this was our very last conversation, what would you say to me?
I love you very much.
Love you too.
You're my life. And I'm very sad that you're going to be leaving when you go away to college. You know, your mom was crying, and I was crying inside, but I didn't want her to see me.
Crying inside.
Why was I? Yeah, because I didn't want her to see me, because I think she's going to start really bawling. But as much as she's so sad that you're leaving someday, I think I'm sadder. Because you're just, you know, when you were born, you became like my firstborn all over again.
Oh.
and I took care of you. I mean, I was with you almost every day, the whole day. We were together all day, every single day. And then until they decided to bring you to that daycare center in Stanford, I was so angry. 1 month, I was so angry that they took you away from me, I felt. You know?
Yeah.
That was one of the saddest things. For a whole month, I had such a hard time. So I'd still go pick you up every once in a while. But you were so close to me until you were 4 years old, 5 years old. Every time I come here and be with you, when I leave, you just cry so hard, you won't let me go. You hold me back.
I remember
you do
that.
All kinds of stuff. And you cry. You cry, cry, cry. And I go visit you when I pick you up at your happy day.
Mm-hmm.
You were so happy to see
that,
me,
too.
You know. And I remember many times you had special things going on in school. Your parents couldn't go because they were still new at their jobs. They can't just take off. So I was the one going. He's always waving at me.
Oh.
The best.
I remember that, too.
The best.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's the last question. Do you have any last thoughts?
Well, Sarah, I love you so much. I hope you'll be happy. I wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you.
Nothing but the best in anything you do. And I hope you don't go so far away because it's going to be really hard for all of us when you're far away.
Yeah.
You know, it's really going to be hard.
Well, I love you too. And that's it.
Yay!
Yay!
Okay. Hey, I like your necklace.